I'm Charlie Zimmerman. Literacy rates in Oregon are some of the lowest in the country, leaving students struggling after the pandemic. In the Bethel School District in Eugene, elementary schoolers who need extra reading help are invited to the free 7-week summer reading program. Its first year, the program has already seen improved literacy rates in students. KLCC's Julia Bobach visited the program to see how it's benefited students and staff alike.
In the small classrooms of Prairie Mountain School in West Eugene, success looks different for everyone. But today is an especially successful day for fifth grader Andrew, who's making progress reading out loud.
Dog.
I'm actually gonna cry. Andrew, you're working so hard. I'm so proud of you.
That's Brittany Sorensen, a literacy coach and this year the principal of Bethel's summer reading program. She lives for moments like these.
She's crying because we're so proud of you.
The success of the program can be seen in the progress made by students like Andrew and in data from the district. After the first year, 1 in 4 students invited to the program no longer needed intensive reading intervention. Now, in their second year open, the program is trying to build on the accomplishments of the previous year with state funding and grants secured for the next 3. The program brings students from kindergarten through fifth grade into small, focused classrooms for 4 hours of daily learning. The curriculum relies on an educational principle called the science of reading. Here's Sorensen again.
We need to have comprehension and decoding for students to be proficient readers. And the thing that's unique about our program is we give equal focus to both. So we're really giving our kids the tools to decode effectively and the background knowledge to comprehend with their reading.
Younger classes start with sound recognition and spelling exercises.
Sound is what sound? Say and spell.
And eventually grow into small group reading.
What if you had animal eyes?
Across all grades, students are reading almost all of the same books, including encyclopedias, short novels, and biographies. Sorensen says a big part of summer school is making the lessons versatile. After their first unit on prehistoric creatures, students aren't just learning to read. They're learning about paleontology, geography, and science. Oliver is a first grader in the program. After learning about dinosaurs, he has a whole new knowledge base.
Do you have a favorite animal?
T-Rex.
Oh, because they're super big.
Actually, I mean Titanoboa. It's the biggest snake in the world that was back then, and the size was 6 school buses.
Oh. And for fourth grader Channa, all these lessons have helped her find a love for reading outside of the classroom.
You can read scary books, you can read fun books, you can read cute books, you can read things like on a rainy day. It feels nice with a cup of tea and a blanket.
The engagement from students of all ages is thanks to a curriculum that makes reading fun. Debbie Holt developed the curriculum this year. She says the most rewarding part is watching her behind-the-scenes work put into practice.
To walk into these classrooms and see these teachers just putting so much love and care into it, and seeing these kids respond and talk amongst each other, there's just something so powerful in that.
The staff in the reading program put in a lot of effort to make the curriculum and classes as interesting and comprehensive as possible, sacrificing their usual summers off to visit local bookstores and make time to talk to kids one-on-one. And it's all to help the students return to the regular school year more prepared than ever.
They're going back with more confidence. They're going back with excitement. They're going back with a whole nother group of friends. Even the fact that they recognize so many other teachers and educational assistants, that makes them feel like they belong.
And for kids like Channa, the best part of summer school is as easy as, well, the ABCs.
My favorite part of school in the summer is that it makes my grades higher than before.
At the end of the summer, Bethel staff will look at whether the overall data shows improvement for students. But the program will also be considered a success because of the differences made for kids like Oliver, Channa, and Andrew, who might still need help next year, but who took big steps forward in their learning career. I'm Julia Bobach, reporting.
Oregon Police Department say they've seen a 265% increase in federal officials asking for help with immigration enforcement. Calls to the state Sanctuary Promise hotline have risen even more. In Oregon, anyone can sue if they believe local law enforcement has wrongfully helped immigration authorities. Only one coalition, the Rural Organizing Project, has done so successfully, winning a suit against Cottage Grove last year. KLCC's Rebecca Hansen-White spoke with Rural Organizing senior organizer Cedra Pearson about the group's efforts.
Can you tell us a little bit about the Rural Organizing Project's history with the Oregon Sanctuary Promise Act?
Oregon is actually the first state to pass any sort of sanctuary law back in 1987. Despite original Oregon sanctuary laws, there is continued engagement between law enforcement, cooperating and even assisting in immigration detention. Our member groups, human dignity groups across the state, started reporting those instances, having conversations with local law enforcement to understand exactly kind of how those violations were happening, because they knew that when our local police are collaborating with agents, that then immigrants in our communities are too afraid to report a crime or call the police for help or safety when they need it, and that then local law enforcement dollars are being used to support this huge multi-billion dollar federal agency instead of being used towards local needs. So with that in mind, they had these meetings, kind of figured out where the law was being violated, and then ROP worked with other allied organizations to pass new legislation to basically shore up and strengthen existing sanctuary laws.
To my knowledge, ROP and the groups it partnered with have had the only successful lawsuit to enforce the Oregon Sanctuary Promise Act. Can you tell me a little bit about that process and how it came about?
Yeah, definitely. So the way that community members went about this is they sat down, and the first thing that they decided they wanted to do was actually just have a sit-down meeting with the police chief and basically see whether he was aware of sanctuary law and the ways in which their current practices were violating it. Over a course of a couple of months, it became apparent that there wasn't any interest to change practices and policies to be in line with sanctuary law, even once it was made very clear to them that their practices were in violation. At that point, that's when we teamed up with CALC and Oregon Law Center to actually sue the city and the police department, because we knew that they were in violation of the law. And it was a chance to test the credibility and the teeth of this new law, because there had been no other lawsuit until that point. So we figured both, let's stop these acts that are making community members in Cottage Grove significantly less safe, and let's also hopefully send a message to the rest of the state that this law has teeth.
Let's say you see a potential violation of the Sanctuary Promise Act and you call the state hotline to report it. Is that enough? What should you be doing next?
There's a lot that we can do as individual community members who care and want to make sure that everyone is safe, or at least mitigate the harm of ICE. So I would say, yes, calling the hotline is just the first step. And then it's getting together, having a group meeting, saying, does local law enforcement know about sanctuary law? If not, who's best positioned to have that conversation? From there, you'll start to gain a lot of information about kind of the knowledge and disposition of local law enforcement and kind of what the best approach would be. ROPs across the state were really happy to have those conversations and support folks if they're trying to navigate what that looks like locally. Every local context is different. So I would just really encourage folks to reach out to us if they're wanting support and kind of making their local plan.
When you think about best practices around the Oregon Sanctuary Promise Act, is there anything that you would say, if you do anything, this is what you should be doing?
Yeah, great question. The first would be to follow the leadership of any immigrant-led Latino organizations that already existing locally. I'd say the second best practice that comes to mind is to always do this as part of a group. ROP has been doing this for a long time, and we found that organizing and making change in your community is not only, you know, more sustainable and effective when you're in a group, but it's a whole lot more fun and just so important to be doing it in community instead of feeling really isolated.
You're listening to a feature showcase on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Charlie Zimmerman. When the small town of Sheridan, Oregon, lost its only health clinic last year, a nonprofit stepped in, bought the clinic, and is getting ready to reopen it. But as OPB's Amelia Templeton reports, the big bill that Congress passed in July has cast a cloud of uncertainty over the future of that clinic and other services in the town.
It's a recent Tuesday afternoon in Sheridan, Oregon. In faraway D.C., President Trump's big domestic policy bill just passed the Senate. Yamhill County is known for its wine country. But here on Bridge Street, the Grand Sheremina Food Bank is handing out food boxes to a line of 20 cars. A driver rolls down her window.
There's some pie shells and bananas.
Thank you. Oh, yum. Whoa, looks like banana pie coming up.
Kaylee, the pie maker, is 72. She doesn't want to give her last name. Kaylee says she relies on food stamps and she's on the Oregon Health Plan, the state's version of Medicaid.
Without it, I would not be able to go to a doctor.
Kaylee says she would hate to see cuts at this food bank, but she thinks it's necessary for the president to cut federal spending. We have to lose to get back on track, she says.
We just have to because we've been so spoiled by Biden that we just have to lose.
Oregon is poised to lose a lot. To help pay for tax cuts, the bill puts new restrictions on state and federal funding for Medicaid, the healthcare program for the poor, starting in 2028. Those restrictions could cut almost $12 billion over 10 years, according to the state health authority. The bill's critics say those cuts won't just affect the 1 in 3 Oregonians on Medicaid. They put hospitals and primary care clinics at risk of closure, especially in rural areas. And in many rural parts of the state, finding a doctor is already hard. A year ago, Sheridan's only medical clinic abruptly closed. Adventist Health Tillamook, which ran the clinic, said it had gotten too hard to recruit doctors to work in rural Oregon. They closed clinics in Welch's and Lincoln City, too. In Sheridan, new owners have stepped in.
You see the blue tape on the floor? That's the pharmacy.
Jared Sherwood is facilities director for Virginia Garcia Medical Center, which bought the clinic. He's giving me a tour.
4 exam rooms in total. There's one.
The nonprofit provides medical and dental care to people regardless of their ability to pay. Their clinics serve about 50,000 patients in Washington and Yamhill counties. Sherwood, the tour guide, lives in Sheridan. He's elated about the clinic reopening. But the bill is very much on his mind, too.
It's taking food off the table and denying people coverage. I think it's unconscionable.
You are getting choked up?
A little bit, yeah. If you take it to heart and really realize the ramifications of what we're doing, I think it's pretty easy to get choked up.
The biggest cuts may be years away, but Virginia Garcia's CEO, Gil Munoz, says the bill has already cast a cloud of uncertainty over their work.
Medicaid really provides about 60% of our revenue for our operations. So even dialing that back 10, 15%, you know, that's a big hit.
One of the first parts of the bill that will go into effect is a work requirement for some adult Medicaid members. People with disabilities and some parents will be exempt. The state is estimating up to 200,000 people could lose coverage because of the work requirements and extra eligibility checks. Munoz says that will set back a 30-year effort in Oregon to drive down the state's uninsured rate, which is one of the lowest in the country right now.
What happens is people, they still remain our patients, you know, they just lose coverage. So they go from being Medicaid to being self-pay. Maybe we'll get $15 for an appointment, you know, a visit, but that's not something you can really pay your staff with.
After Virginia Garcia bought the clinic, they applied for a special federal grant for new rural clinics. They were hoping to get $650,000. Instead, Munoz says, they were told that the new administration had put the program on pause. The bottom line is that with a doctor committed and the remodeling work almost done, the Sheridan Clinic will still open in September. But its future is much less certain.
Do you want some frozen pie shells?
Back at the food bank across town, Debbie DeMarco is picking up a box of cereal and canned food. DeMarco is 73. She says she has chronic conditions from polio. But she hasn't been to the doctor in 12 years because of the copays and deductibles.
They take $185 out of my Social Security check. Doesn't kick in until I paid like $250-something. And then it only covers 80%. So I just choose to be healthy and not go to the doctor.
Because you can't afford it.
I cannot afford it. There's no way.
DeMarco hasn't heard about the new clinic. She says she might see a doctor if it was totally free. DeMarco has heard about the bill that's cutting Medicaid and food stamps. She wonders what's going to happen to her Meals on Wheels deliveries.
It really is terrifying. I can't stress that enough.
Food is something she can't just go without. In Sheridan, Oregon, I'm Amelia Templeton.